¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
A blonde woman walked alone on the streets at night. She should have known better. Hadn't she heard there was a killer roaming the streets? She didn't seem scared either, just determined to get to her destination. I caught up to her. "Excuse me, ma'am, what are you doing out here at night?" I could tell she didn't trust me. She glanced down at my hands, which were both in my pockets. She probably thought I was hiding a knife or something. If she had read the news, she would have known that the killer used an axe. And I definitely wasn't carrying one of those in my pocket. I pulled my hands out of my pockets to make her feel better. "If it's okay with you, ma'am, I'd like to walk you home."
"Okay."
It really bothered me that she didn't trust me. Didn't I look friendly enough? We started walking together. It was a dark night, no moon, which was usually when the killer came out. "What's your name?"
"Virginia."
I knew she was lying. I'd seen her before. Her name was Janice, and she lived in the blue house just past the park. We'd actually met before, but I didn't want to tell her that. I didn't want to scare her off. She sped up her steps, so I did too. To ease her nerves, I told her a little about myself, how I moved to New Orleans with my wife 2 years ago, how I worked at a bank, how I took nighttime walks even though I knew it was dangerous. I think the conversation eased her nerves a little. I asked her why she was out here all alone at night.
"I was visiting my sister. I didn't realize how late it had gotten. I thought a bus would still be running, but it's not."
She was being honest with me now. I appreciated that. She shivered. I wanted to let her wear my trench coat, but I couldn't take it off. I noticed that her house was getting close. Just a few more minutes and she'd be there. I asked her what she knew about the axe man who was terrorizing the city. He'd been all over the papers, but a lot of people had some pretty incorrect assumptions about him. That's what happens when you have a local figure that gets elevated into an urban legend. I shouldn't have brought it up, though. I could tell that my question unnerved her. She started walking faster. I did, too.
"He's, just a psycho. I'm sure the police will catch him soon."
"I hope so." We finally reached her house. She hurried up the porch and started fumbling with her keys. She looked at me over her shoulder.
Thanks, sir. I think I got it from here."
She was seconds away from opening her door. This was my time to strike. I looked up and down the street to make sure that no one was nearby. Then I reached under my trench coat and pulled out the axe I had strapped to my chest. She heard me stepping closer and her trembling fingers dropped her keys onto the porch.
"It's you! Why are you... What do you want?"
I brought down the axe, just one strike, and she immediately stopped talking. I wish I had an answer for her. I wish I knew what I wanted. I moved to New Orleans because Sarah, my wife, thought it would be the perfect place to practice my music. I was a saxophonist and I had dreams of making it big. Unfortunately, those dreams didn't pan out, and I took a job at a bank. I could barely provide for Sarah, but she always seemed happy. She was in love with the city. We went to clubs every weekend, enjoying our new marriage and forgetting about all our money troubles. Then, late one night, when we were walking home on an empty street, a mugger jumped out of an alley and demanded my wife's jewelry. Sarah took pride in her necklace. It wasn't worth much, but she'd gotten it from her grandmother. It was her prized possession. When she tried to fight him off, he pushed her against the wall. She fell so fast that my brain could barely register what happened.
My wife hit her head hard and crumpled to the ground. The mugger could see that she was bleeding, but he still tore off her necklace and ran away. I tried to take her to the hospital, but it was too late. She died in my arms. I carried her body for blocks until I reached the police station. I demanded they track down her murderer. I gave them all the information I had, and I think they tried their best, but the killer was never brought to justice. When I got back home, I felt more rage than anyone could imagine. I wanted to punish her killer, and if I couldn't do that, I wanted to punish the city for robbing me of the one good thing in my life. That's when I picked up an axe and started killing. Each murder relieves some of my anger, but it's never enough. I can't stop until the whole city pays. Maybe one day the police will catch me. Maybe they'll do a better job than they did with my wife's killer. I doubt it, though. I don't want to do this. I really don't. Most days, I tell myself it's over. I put the axe back in my shed and try to forget. But then night comes, and I go back out. I wish someone would finally stop me. In 1918 and 1919, the city of New Orleans was gripped by fear as a ruthless killer known as the Axeman preyed on Italian-American grocers. Striking in the dead of night, he chiseled his way into homes and attacked the victims with their own axes. Despite the brutality, he rarely stole anything, fueling speculation about his true motives. In March 1919, he taunted the city with a letter, demanding jazz music be played to spare lives. After his final attack in October 1919, he vanished without a trace. His identity remains one of America's greatest unsolved mysteries.
Even if you are watching this on TV, please subscribe and hit like. It only takes a second, but helps the channel a lot.
There was a new dental office near my work. It looked normal on the outside, but I got a really weird feeling every time I walked by. I always saw the same people going in. One lady, a red-haired woman who always wore a black dress, had entered the office at least 6 times in the last month. I know that a lot of people don't really care for their teeth the way that they should, but no one needs that much dental work, right? Something must be going on there. And the weirdest part was that they came out happy and smiling. No one walks out of the dental appointment smiling. I thought it might be some front for illegal activity. Like, you know what I mean. But none of the clients looked like they would be involved with that kind of stuff. They looked normal, like regular people. One day on my lunch break, I decided to check things out. I noticed a patient about to enter the building. He was a handsome guy, and his teeth looked fine. I didn't recognize him, so it didn't seem like he was one of the regular patients. Before he entered, I ran over and pulled him aside. I didn't want the receptionist to see us talking outside the window. "Excuse me, I was wondering about this dental office. What can you tell me about it?" The man explained that he just chipped a tooth at lunch, and since he was new to the area, he scheduled an appointment here. They were kind enough to make him wait for months and then give him an instant appointment. He'd never heard of the place until today. He seemed pretty normal, trustworthy even. I started to think that maybe I was paranoid over nothing. "You seem kind of spooked. Is there something I should know?" I told him no and wished him luck. I was still a bit curious though, so I stuck around for a while and waited for him to come back out. I didn't have a lot of work to do that day anyway. Less than an hour later, he walked out of the office looking upset. He told me that the dentist fixed his chip, but discovered he had 3 dead teeth that needed to be extracted. He made another appointment with them the next day. His teeth looked totally fine to me, so I asked him if he believed the dentist. "Of course, dentists don't lie." Then he left. Obviously, the dentist was scamming people. He had to convince this poor guy that he had problems that he clearly didn't have. No wonder people kept coming back. There wasn't anything I could do about it, though. I couldn't force these patients to come to their senses. For the next few days, I noticed the same man entering the dental office again and again. Every time he left, he looked less and less like himself. I knew it was the same guy, but something was different about him every time. I couldn't put my finger on exactly how he was different, though. I just got a weird feeling about it. After a full week of the man's daily visits, I finally had enough and needed to talk to him. I caught him just as he was coming out. careful not to be seen through the office window. Excuse me, you remember me, right? The man smiled at me, and it was the biggest, brightest smile I'd ever seen. His teeth looked way too perfect. I'm sorry, sir, I've never seen you in my entire life. And I watched him stroll away after that. How could he not have remembered me? Now I was more curious than ever. Later in the evening, I decided to walk into the dental office myself. The lobby was empty, but I could hear noises coming from the back. Someone was still here. Very quietly, I looked around the lobby and didn't find anything suspicious. I wanted to snoop around while the coast was clear, but all the file cabinets were locked, and I didn't want to make any noise by prying them open. I started to hear drilling noises coming from behind the door. I knew it was dangerous, but I had to see what was going on here. I quietly opened the door and stepped inside. I was in a hallway. Everything seemed normal, just a regular dental office. I followed the noises to the medicine cabinet at the end of the hallway. It had to be some kind of secret door. What the hell? I pushed it open and saw a dark stairway leading down into a basement. I tried being as absolutely quiet as I could as I descended down the stairs. Pretty soon, I reached a metal door with one of those circular portal windows. I peered inside and couldn't believe what I saw. It was a secret operating room lit up by fluorescent lights. An elderly dentist, tall and gaunt, was leaning over his patient, screwing in a tooth. Once the dentist was finished, the patient sat straight up, and it wasn't the same patient I met earlier. I'd literally seen him walking out of the building, but now there he was, sitting on an operating table. He was grinning widely, but a few of his front teeth were gone. Then I noticed the glass tubes lining each side of the room. Each tube had a different person inside. I recognized all of them as patients I had seen entering and leaving the building. Under each body was a plaque with their names and the words, "Clones in Progress." I stumbled a little in shock. The man in the operating chair, the clone, looked right at me through the window and pointed. The dentist turned, and he saw me too. I had to get out of there, fast. I scurried up the stairs, no longer trying to be quiet, and raced out of the building. I drove outside where, thank God, a policeman was walking by.
Sir, you have to help me. I know this sounds crazy, but...
I immediately stopped talking. The policeman was smiling at me. I could see his perfect, shiny white teeth.
What?
I sped away and didn't even stop to look back. A dentist was accused of allegedly defrauding dental patients over the past decade through illegal clinics. The experience of one Jason Tuzinski, a patient in 2021, was crucial. He noticed red flags when a dentist claimed 14 teeth needed treatment. Tuzinski shared that he was charged $7,000 for procedures that never happened and was frustrated by the inexperience of the staff. Detectives revealed that he was overcharged around $1,400, and he was one of 80 defrauded patients. Investigators found the Cruises used Dr. Ivan Pentel's dental license without his ownership. Dr. Pelton admitted that Evelyn Cruz was the owner of the clinics. His bankruptcy filings showed significant debt and reportedly accepted $60,000 for using his name and license in Florida. The investigation has been ongoing for 3 years. It all began when John, my longtime friend, scored a big promotion at his law firm. He wanted to celebrate in style, so he invited Trevor and me to dine at the most extravagant restaurant in town. We arrived in our casual clothes, jeans, sneakers, and lightweight jackets, unaware of the pretentious atmosphere that awaited us. The man at the front desk gave us one glance and sneered, making us feel unwelcome from the start. "Do you have reservations, gentlemen?" he asked in a condescending tone. His eyes flickered over our clothing, as though we'd shown up in garbage bags. John forced a polite smile. "Yes, we do. John Edwards, party of three."
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The man tapped his pen on the reservation book. "Right this way," he said, his voice remaining icy. We followed him into the dining room, which was draped in shimmering chandeliers and plush red carpets. The customers around us wore expensive suits and designer dresses. Trevor, feeling out of place, muttered under his breath, "You think they'd treat us with some common courtesy? We're paying customers." I tried to lighten the mood. "Hey, relax, Trev. Just enjoy the evening. John's treat, remember?" John ignored our chatter, though I could sense his annoyance growing by the minute. After a tense walk, we were seated at a table near the back of the restaurant, practically by the kitchen doors. The hostess handed us menus and then disappeared, without so much as a welcome. The evening's tension started to build. John tried ordering a bottle of champagne to mark his triumph, but the waiter kept rolling his eyes, acting as though our presence was a nuisance. We exchanged uncertain glances. Eventually, John signaled the waiter. "Hey, we've been waiting a long time. Can you bring the champagne, please?" The waiter huffed. "Yes, sir, just a moment." Yet 15 minutes passed before the bottle arrived. By then, John's temper was wearing thin. He poured the champagne himself, no sign of the usual flair or service we expected. Trevor leaned over, whispering, "They're treating us like we don't belong. I say we just leave. Find somewhere else." But John was stubborn. "I got that promotion," he said. "I deserve to celebrate here. Let them look down on us. I'm not going anywhere." As the night wore on, the tension kept simmering. We tried to toast John's success, but the mood was sour. Each time we requested something, a refill, an extra napkin, our waiter took an eternity. Meanwhile, we watched other tables receive impeccable service. It was infuriating, and the champagne did little to ease the comfort. By the time we finished our main course, John's frustration had turned into open resentment. He waved the waiter over, demanding to speak with the manager. Moments later, a portly man in a tailored suit appeared, barely concealing his own hostility.
"Is there a problem?" he asked.
John shot back,
"Yes, there is a problem.
We've been treated like second-class citizens all night. I chose this place to celebrate, and we're receiving nothing but rude behavior." The manager shrugged. "We're a high-end establishment, sir. Our clientele expects a certain level of decorum and dress." I could feel my heart pounding. "So you're saying we don't fit the dress code, and that justifies terrible service?" I asked, my voice shaking in anger.
"Perhaps you should have chosen a place more aligned with your style," the manager replied. He snapped his fingers at the waiter to clear our plates.
That was the breaking point. John glared at us, and before I knew it, he ordered a round of top-shelf whiskey. We started downing shots one after another, fueling our resentment with liquid courage.
"I'm not leaving until they regret this," John hissed through his clenched teeth.
Trevor nodded, his eyes glazed.
"I'm with you, man. Let's show them we're not pushovers."
An hour later, we were thoroughly intoxicated. My memory turned hazy, but I recall John leading us away from the table, stumbling towards the kitchen doors. No one tried to stop us until we reached the chef's domain. Stainless steel counters lined the room, and the staff turned in alarm at our sudden entrance.
"Get out of here!"
barked the head cook, brandishing a spatula. John staggered forward, an odd grin on his face.
"Who do you think we are?"
he snarled. And then, to my shock, he smacked the cook across the face with a swift slap. The kitchen staff erupted in protest, shouting for security. Trevor, caught in the chaos, pushed one of the sous chefs aside. I remember someone lunging at me, and I instinctively shoved them back. The clatter of pots and pans thundered around us. Through the corner of my eye, I saw the restaurant's large saltwater tank, home to their prized lobsters. John, emboldened by the whiskey, pointed at the biggest one.
"That's the most expensive lobster here," he slurred. "Let's take it on the house," Trevor cheered. "Hell yeah," In an unbelievable moment of madness, John reached into the tank and hoisted the enormous creature into the air. Water splashed everywhere, and the staff screamed. "Put it back!" one shouted. We barreled out of the kitchen, the lobster still dripping in his arms, wreaking havoc in our wake. I swear, if I had been in my right mind, I would have run, but the alcohol was in control. Adrenaline took over, and we dashed out of the restaurant, ignoring the frantic cries behind us. Once on the street, the cold night air slapped me awake, but not enough to quell my reckless excitement. "We did it," Trevor cried, nearly doubling over in laughter. I was breathing heavily, trying to gather myself. "John, man, that's insane. We just assaulted the staff and stole a lobster." John shrugged, his face flushed. "They deserved it for treating us like trash. Let's enjoy this lobster at my place. Boil it ourselves." The three of us climbed into Trevor's car, the stolen lobster still dripping in such a large plastic bag John had snatched on the way out. Looking back, I remember feeling a twist of guilt, but I was too far gone to fully acknowledge it. Our drunken triumph was short-lived. Early the next morning, my phone buzzed insistently. Trevor's panicked voice came through the line. "Ugh, they have us on CCTV, man." The cops showed up at my door asking questions. "Where's John?" I managed. "He's already in custody," Trevor said. "They came for him first, but we're in deep trouble." It didn't take long for the police to knock on my door. The sense of dread in my gut was overwhelming. I tried to keep calm, but I knew there was no denying the evidence. The restaurant had TV footage of everything, and the slap, the chaos, and the theft of the prized lobster. In 2018, an intoxicated Florida woman, Kimberly Gable, caused a scene at a Red Lobster in St. Petersburg, disturbing customers. When asked to leave, she grabbed a live lobster from the tank and fled the restaurant. Authorities responded to a 911 call and soon located Gable, who was heavily intoxicated, slurring her words and unaware of the lobster's location. She claimed she was too drunk to remember. Arrested for disorderly intoxication, she was later released on a $100 bond.
Even if you are watching this on TV, please subscribe and hit like. It only takes a second, but helps the channel a lot.
My name is Ben, and for as long as I can remember, fear had been my constant companion. From elementary school to my first job in a bustling city, bullying seemed to follow me relentlessly. When I moved in with John, my new roommate, I naively thought my life would improve. It didn't. John was a muscular giant. A bodybuilder who took pride in his intimidating stature. From the moment we started sharing an apartment, he made sure I knew my place. Every morning, I'd wake up to his booming voice ordering me around.
"Ben, why the hell aren't my eggs ready yet?"
he'd yell, lounging on the couch with a smirk. "Coming right up," I'd mutter timidly, rushing through the tiny kitchen. Any delay or mistake would result in harsh punishment, usually verbal, occasionally physical. My finances were precarious, I couldn't afford to leave, so I quietly endured the torment, internalizing the rage and humiliation each day. One mundane afternoon, while cleaning the apartment under John's watchful glare, I discovered something intriguing in his bedside drawer. False teeth. My mind raced as I stared at them. John, with all his macho bravado, was hiding this embarrassing secret. A cunning smile spread across my face for the first time in months. That night, sleep evaded me as I concocted a plan. Subtle, yet effective. I decided to throw a surprise party, inviting John's closest friends without telling him. I knew they'd accept without suspicion. After all, John was charismatic among peers, even if he was brutal to me. The evening of the party arrived. Our apartment buzzed with laughter and clinking glasses. When John entered after his evening workout, his face contorted with confusion and suspicion.
"What's going on here, Ben?"
he demanded. I plastered on my most innocent expression. "Surprise, John! It's a celebration of your recent job promotion. I thought you'd appreciate it." He hesitated briefly, but noticing the smiles from his friends, his suspicion melted away. "All right, then. Thanks, I guess," he muttered, unable to openly reject the praise. I steered him gently toward the kitchen table. I even prepared your favorite cereal as a snack. John nodded and grabbed the bowl without a second thought. Hidden beneath the golden flakes lay my carefully chosen sabotage. Tiny hard pellets and fragments of gravel. My heart pounded with excitement as he lifted the spoon to his mouth. The first crunch echoed louder in my ears than the music. John's eyes widened in panic as his false teeth slipped from his gums, landing grotesquely in his bowl. A silence enveloped the room before erupting into uncontrollable laughter. Holy shit! John, what happened to your teeth? Someone roared. John's face reddened in humiliation. He whipped around, eyes searing with fury, locking onto mine instantly. You bastard! He growled. And before I could react, John's massive hand wrapped around my throat, lifting me effortlessly from the ground. His friends gasped, too shocked to intervene. You think this is funny? You worthless coward! John spat, his grip tightening painfully. Stop! Please! I choked, clawing desperately at his iron grasp. You've humiliated me for the last time! Police officers stormed the apartment, wrenching John off of me. I lay battered and barely conscious as they cuffed and restrained him. When the officers questioned the guests, everyone backed my story. After all, many of them had tasted John's cruelty firsthand, though never as harshly as I had. To the authorities, John's attack seemed utterly unprovoked. Just an insane reaction over stale cereal. At the hospital, as nurses tended to my wounds, an officer approached my bedside. Ben, can you tell me what happened exactly? He asked gently. I feigned innocent confusion. I threw a party for John's promotion. He got angry because the cereal was stale, I guess. The officer shook his head sympathetically, taking notes. We've had complaints about John before. He's known for his temper. Don't worry, Ben, you're safe now. I nodded gratefully, hiding my satisfaction beneath a veil of trauma. John was charged with assault and given a restraining order against approaching me. For the first time in my life, I was free. One night, months after the incident, my phone buzzed. An unknown number. Hello? I answered cautiously. A familiar voice, cold and sinister, replied. You think you've won, Ben? Enjoy it while it lasts. My heart froze. John? How did you... I know everything. You tricked everyone, but not me, he hissed. Sooner or later, the truth comes out. The line disconnected abruptly, leaving me trembling in fear. Sleep became elusive. Paranoia, my new tormentor. Had someone betrayed me? Had John uncovered my deceit? In February of 2018, a domestic dispute in Moundville, Alabama, took a bizarre turn when 52-year-old Dwayne Barry Smith assaulted his roommate over stale Cap'n Crunch cereal. Smith, who was missing teeth, struggled to eat the hardened cereal and blamed his roommate for failing to seal the box properly. Frustrated, he demanded the man remove his dentures to experience the difficulty firsthand. When the roommate refused, Smith allegedly struck him with an electrical cord, causing injuries to his face, hand, and arm. He was later arrested for domestic violence, though authorities did not confirm whether he remained in custody.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.